From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Maria Zakharova is the spokesperson for the Foreign Ministry of the Russian Federation. She held her weekly press conference Thursday, covering a number of items of international import for both her country and the U.S. We bring you excerpts from her discussion with the press on Thursday in Moscow.
Good afternoon. We move on to the main items of agenda. And I will begin with the situation concerning an unfortunate outbreak of coronavirus. We inform you frequently through our ministerial departments, which is our priority. The priority is to maintain contact with Russian citizens who are abroad and in the countries where this virus was found, and in the countries where there were no such cases. But nevertheless, we maintain these contacts. So I would ask you to regularly pay attention to those of our accounts and our sites. We have a hotline, and in these contacts, without repeating the information on our sites, I would like to talk about the situation with our Russian citizens who are on Diamond Princess ship. We pay attention to the measures taken by the Japanese government. As we know, the situation is not optimistic, and in 14 days, the number of infected has grown 60 times. Today, 79 passengers were diagnosed with the coronavirus. And speaking of coronavirus, I mean one certain form of it. So the infection toll is 621 people. Unfortunately, there are two fatal cases, and this information is already published in the media. Russian embassy in Japan, since the very first day of the quarantine, contacts the Russians. As you know, there are 24 people, and our compatriot was hospitalized to Okazaki, which is the prefecture Aichi. Taking into account high risks, his wife was sent there as well. We maintain contact with them and with their doctors, and according to the latest news, two Russian citizens were positively tested, and they will be hospitalized as well. As you know, on the 19th and 20th of February, the Japanese said that the quarantine was finished for six citizens of Russia. They will get their certificates on absence of coronavirus. They will be helped by the embassy. The embassy of Russia keeps maintaining contact with Russian passengers. Our embassy is ready to assist in solving consular and visa issues. Once again, I would like to seize the occasion holding the meeting with you, with journalists, and to ask our citizens to contact our embassies. I'll remind you that we have hotlines, we have social media accounts. We have all the necessary information on the sites. In case you need help, support, or answers to your questions, any information that can help you, you can find it. Once again, I'd like to stress that we have special account, and you can use it. As you know, on the 7th of February, we've published on our site a commentary on briefing concerning OPCW. It was a problem of disclosing sensitive information during the preparation of a report by the fact-finding mission. It concerns the use of chemical agent in Duma. I would like to address this topic once again. We have this information on the site. So the fact of holding this event was surprising. The statement of the Director General of the Technical Secretariat, Fernando Arias Gonzalez, could only talk for 15 minutes to talk about this issue. After that, the attending representatives of the Chemical Weapons Convention member states could ask their questions. There were a lot of them, but they could only do it in a written form, despite the fact that people were ready to discuss them. And there was anything but dialogue. So I would like to say that this event was announced under the format that had to provide for live communication. The algorithm, lame as we see it, for bringing to notice the opinions and considerations of the technical secretariat of this scandal situation, let alone non-admittance of media and NGO representatives to this event, is surprising. And as you know, this committee received a Nobel Peace Prize with the assistance after they removed chemical weapon components from Syria with the assistance of Russia, China, USA, and other countries. After successfully finishing this situation, after the successful joint effort to destroy Syrian chemical weapons, the situation did not change much. Today, the former experts of OPCW, who care about the credibility and reputation of the CWC, published and made public this most cynical, politically driven falsification of FFM reports. Such manipulations were exemplified in the justification of missile attacks by the USA, UK, France against the Syrian territory. I'm talking about accusations following a high visibility chemical provocation in Duma. Their sponsors, foreign the White Helmets, pseudo-humanitarian NGO, hardly anyone doubts their nationality, reason being time and time again. Since 2013, we see the same scenario, provocations using chemical agents, and combat toxic agents, that are followed by sanctions or missile attacks. I'd like to remind you about the Eastern Ghouta, Khan Sheikhoun, Al-Latamina, Saraqib, and other similar incidents. All of this is proved by true facts. Many independent experts and specialists say about that, as well as representatives of the media, social and political figures. It is quite rare that the representatives of different social groups coincide in their opinions. As I've already said, we are talking about experts who worked on the command of this organization, and they formed their point of view based on the documents, based on what witnesses said and their own analysis. And the convergence of views of the representatives of countries who are participating in this investigation. They even appealed collectively to the member states of the CWC and personally to the UN Secretary General as the CWC depository. They appealed to deal with this situation and to take measures, urgent measures, in order to re-establish credibility of OPCW. We hope that this appeal will be heard and that justice will triumph. In fact, for me, justice is not some abstract thing. It's a precise legal item. We need a political and legal assessment of everything we've seen, of everything that happened, of everything that has proofs, that has witnesses on the platform of OPCW. And we really hope that those behind all those falsifications will cease their dirty, provocative actions. Libya. We've paid attention to the commentary of High Representatives of the EU and Policy on Security, Mr. Borrell, on the intention of the EU to replace the current naval operation Sophia with some military operation on controlling the arms embargo of the UN in Libya. There is no final decision, and we think that when shaping the modalities of the new operation, the European Union and those who work on it will agree on that with the Security Council of the UN, because it is impossible. They cannot take any actions that would be seen as disrespect to the prerogatives of this supreme body in the sphere of maintaining peace and security. But in Libya, some actors have already disregarded the recommendations and the decisions of the Security Council of the UN, having legally binding force. We see these consequences, and in this context, we still need to find out more on the information that in Brussels, they think that there will be no new mandate necessary. We remember 2011, when the NATO states deformed the resolution 1973 of the Security Council of the UN, when they militarily aggressed Libya, which almost ruined this country and exacerbated the migration crisis in Europe. The president of the Russian Federation, during the Berlin Conference on Libyan Settlement, said that no national or regional mechanisms can be used only if certain countries or group of countries wishes that. I'd like to remind you that we still see the consequences, but we hope that through Security Council, our European colleagues will be able to elaborate new solutions in order to respect international law and the UN Security Council prerogatives.
Afghanistan, we have received questions about the final results of the presidential election in this country. As you are aware, on the 18th of February, the Independent Election Commission of Afghanistan announced the final results of the presidential election in Afghanistan, which pronounced the incumbent President Ghani the winner. We also noted the non-recognition of the announced results by the key opponent of Ghani, the chief executive of Afghanistan, Abdullah. He announced he's going to establish a parallel government. There is information that this attitude can be supported by other candidates for the presidency. Russia is concerned by the conflict regarding the presidential election in Afghanistan. It is fraught with further exacerbation of internal political situation, and this all can have a very negative impact on the launch of the inter-Afghan peace process. We call upon interested stakeholders of the country to find positively a solution to this situation that would meet the interest of the Afghani people and bring lasting peace to Afghanistan. Now, Ukraine. First and foremost, let me cover the situation in Donbas. We are deeply troubled by the Donbas confrontation. According to Lugansk representatives, in JCCC on the 18th of February, not far from the disengagement area in the village of Zolotoye. Very sharp exacerbation of the situation took place. The armed forces of Ukraine started an intensive fire again using mortar systems. The attack was striking back by the LNR People's Militia. Symptomatically, this provocation took place on the eve of the UN Security Council meeting dedicated to the 5th anniversary of signing the Minsk agreements. It was convened through the initiative of Russia, and we hope that this incident will be considered in the next meeting of the countergroup in Minsk on the 26th of February. During these weeks, during these days, we are celebrating anniversaries of different kinds. We have already mentioned the 5th anniversary of the Minsk agreements. Tomorrow, on the 21st of February, we are going to see the 6th anniversary starting of the coup d'etat in Ukraine. 6 years ago, we all witnessed tragic events in the center of Kyiv. These tragic events did not result from a disaster or an emergency. They have been provoked for many years through external actors, through Western countries. There were several attempts of carrying out this coup d'etat using legal instruments to this end, distorting, but nevertheless referring to legislation. 6 years ago, they forgot about the legal component completely. It was so desperate for them to change the political situation in Ukraine. This resulted in a coup d'etat full of bloodshed. It shocked the very pillars of this country and resulted an armed conflict in Donbas and brought a systemic crisis to the country. This was in many ways facilitated by foreign countries, the United States in the first place. Whatever happened in Ukraine further could not be described otherwise than the continuous political chaos, nihilism and national extremism. There were also attempts to distort truth considering these events too, to conceal true facts behind accusations. But you know, truth always prevails, and facts are stubborn. These things cannot be hidden. Sooner or later, this becomes public. In the end of the last year, Ukraine saw crisis concerning falsification materials published by Lukash, former minister of Ukraine. It was found out that the Sky 100 included people who died not because of shorts or wounds, but because of health issues, and not even in Kyiv. Recently, the United States screened a documentary about mass killing and involving Biden. This, in fact, covered the idea of who stood behind the revolution of dignity. In Ukraine, it was banned for screening, but you can look for yourself. You can find this video online and break through this information blockade. The same was done for other documentaries and screenings covering unknown pages of Maidan. For instance, a documentary by Italian directors, Ukraine Hidden Secrets. It is about snipers, and also a film by Oliver Stone, Ukraine on Fire. 2014 events could be further investigated if a detailed approach had been taken. Those who provided the president with his office had something to conceal. Right upon doing so, they started creating myths. There were people who were offended, shortchanged. There were different mistakes made in different spheres of life, but we are talking about the constitutional coup d'etat, about a throwover, a military activity which was conducted by well-prepared and armed people. These people were far from angry housewives or those who don't have enough pensions or salaries. These were boisterous crowds trained in special camps for many years. They knew how to equip themselves, they knew how to dress themselves, and they knew how to behave themselves in the streets and to wage full-fledged military actions. You can look at the shootings of that years, and you can compare that with peace demonstrations. There is a striking difference. Previously, in 2014, the winners of Maidan, after signing agreement with Poland, France, and others, with Yanukovych, in fact, put a lid on the same agreement, and we drew attention of our foreign partners to this fact, who in fact promoted the whole agreement. It was intended to solve the crisis of the country. Instead of creating a national unity government, this government, in fact, promised, and it was declared during negotiations with foreign partners, instead of a national unity government, the so-called oppositionists opted for the confrontation path. I'm calling them the so-called oppositioners because when they came to power, it became clear who they are sponsored by. And nobody, in fact, concealed what countries and governments led them to power. These are not oppositionists. This is not a domestic opposition. These are people who were paid and hired in order to carry out coup d'etat in a sovereign state. All this was taking place with a silent consent of Europeans, guarantors, countries of the same agreement. They simply failed to stop the so-called revolutionaries. In fact, they did what they were prescribed to do and paid for. Such peace-building activities of the West, as they were declared, resulted in serious implications for Ukraine. Tomorrow we will share more detailed explanations. In this regard, it will be published on the MFA website. There is another topic in the same context. We noted statements made by the UK permanent representative of the United Nations, Karen Pearce, during the recent meeting of the UN Security Council concerning Ukraine. She said in a baseless way that our country allegedly does nothing to ensure the safe delivery of international humanitarian aid so desperately needed by many of the communities of Donbas. Again, the representative of the UK sitting in the UN Security Council, being live and being aware of the fact that she is heard by the whole world, she claimed that Russia does nothing to ensure the safe delivery of international humanitarian aid to the communities of Donbas. What Skripals are we talking about? They're even lying on such ridiculous case. There are not even facts, there are hours, minutes, chronicles, dozens of hours of chronicles showing Russia not only delivering but also collecting humanitarian aid. I, living in Moscow, can attest to that, and I think you have seen it for yourself. That happens in other cities of Russia too. In Moscow, for many years, there were tents in place with people collecting humanitarian aid. I'm talking not only about money, but it's also toys, books, domestic appliances. These all were collected to help the communities of Donbas. And then, in the Security Council hall, the representative of the UK encourages us to ensure the safe delivery of humanitarian aid and accusing us of doing nothing. She demanded from Russia that Russia ceases the practice of sending unexpected humanitarian convoys. What a quotation for those living in southeastern Ukraine. It looks so unreal. In fact, it takes a stretch of imagination that something like that had happened. Something is wrong in the kingdom, in the United Kingdom. Maybe we should remind about that not the UK officials, but the UK communities, to draw the attention to the fact what their official representatives are saying. Russia was, in fact, the first country to provide humanitarian aid to the communities of Donbas, and that happened when the armed forces of Ukraine were immediately deploying military activities. Certainly, if we read the British press, if we read Guardian, this is not humanitarian aid. This is delivery of tanks, weapons, mortars in big white trucks. I remember all these publications. I remember when representatives, maybe of Guardian, I will double check, they wrote in social media alarmist messages that it is mandatory that humanitarian assistance used as a guise should be stopped. And I also remember the photos of these white trucks bringing tanks. In fact, it was humanitarian aid inside of these trucks. And it was not only inspected. Moreover, from these trucks, people took things that are referred to as the humanitarian aid. It is clothes, medications, foods. Starting August 2014, the Emircom of Russia delivered 85,000+ tons of various humanitarian cargoes. I reiterate, these are foodstuffs, medications, toys for children, personal hygiene items. The relevant information is available. At a certain stage, I think we mentioned this information during every briefing, during every session, and we published this information showing people standing in the streets and collecting humanitarian aid, and you can contact international humanitarian organizations, but London is failing to familiarize itself with this information. Instead, it distorts it. As to the encouragement by Madam Pierce to us to facilitate the delivery of international aid to Donbas, let us forward the same message to the UK and other Western countries. We encourage them to convince the current Kyiv authorities to cease economic, food, and transport blockade of the southeastern Ukraine. What measures have you taken? What issues have you discussed during your negotiations with the Ukrainian president and the former president of Ukraine? When these questions were officially raised, people are living for many years in a total blockade. Moreover, these facts have been fixed and recorded by yourselves in officially recognized international instruments. These steps taken by Western countries, and I mean appeals to practically cease blockades, they would really facilitate the life of people in the region. In the context of the United Nations and the falsification made by our foreign Western friends, let me stress the following. A publication by the British Times. I'm talking about comments by Andrew Foxall with a certain set of Russophobic innuendos. In the context of the United Nations, it's not Ukraine, but nevertheless.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.